Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations.
It's the Early Morning Late Show with Bill Arnold. The Early Morning Late Show. Get your day started.
Good morning. I hope this starts your day right. It's 4 minutes after the hour. I am Bill Arnold. I'm glad you're with me today. Thank you for turning on the radio or flipping on your phone and hitting that app, MyFaithRadio.com app, which is readily available. If you want to go download that, that's a good thing to have on your smartphone. I want to start with a passage from Hebrews. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. I love that line, the race marked out for us. When I think of that word, the word race in the Greek is agnon, which we get our word agony. So we've got to persevere, and we do have a race marked out for us. John Newton says, everything is necessary that he sends. Nothing can be necessary that he withholds. So whatever we have in our life that seems difficult or challenging, we still have a path. God has marked out a race for us, which is awfully comforting. And just if you don't understand or see what your plan is, that doesn't mean that there is not a plan. God has a plan for you, and he has a race marked out for you. And life is, I think life is full of lots of difficulties. If anyone tells you differently, they're probably trying to sell you something. That's my guess. All right, we've got a great show this morning. Carmen LeBurge is with us. We're going to bring her on in just a minute. And Dr. Rosemary Stein is with us this morning. So that's how we're starting hour one. We'll take a break and be back with Carmen in just a minute.
We're connecting faith and life together.
This radio station honestly really cemented things through many years and many, many things going on. You know, they're 24/7 and good sound teaching. Chuck Swindoll, Stanley, now Greg Laurie, and it's just there, and it cements what you're picking up out of your Bible, and it kind of puts feet to it. So I really appreciate this station.
Thanks for making us your radio home, Faith Radio. We're sharing each day together.
The world is not helping our faith increase, but Faith Radio presents us with truths, and our soul needs nothing more than to have the truth presented on such a regular basis to encourage us, to lift us up, to let us know that we're not alone in the midst of our trials. So Faith Radio is a lifeline to me, and I know that confidently if people are seeking the truth, it's invaluable to just developing fellowship and communion with the Lord.
Thanks for being part of the family of Faith Radio.
Do you and your spouse see eye to eye when it comes to finances? Hi, it's Chuck Bentley with My Money Life from Crown. Crown's founder, the late Larry Burkett, says that when a couple sits down to create a family budget, their differences can actually be one of their biggest assets.
I think sometimes that we don't understand the relationship that God has between a husband and wife. With rare exception, and there are only a few exceptions that I've ever met, I never saw a couple that were similar. In fact, if they were similar, I believe one of them was unnecessary. And that's why God put opposites together. You know that's true. I mean, I know how it is in my life. I know how it is in your life. Most times, one of you gets up and the other likes to stay in bed, right? One goes to bed early and the other keeps them awake all done. One of you splashes and the other's a constant cleaner. One of you gets lost and the other knows where you are. That's what, see, I get lost everywhere. And I'll ask my wife, finally, if I'm irritated with her, I'll drive for half an hour trying to figure out where I am. See? But usually I'll say, which way? And she'll say, go that way. I say, why? She said, I don't know. Just go that way. Then go this way. And pretty soon we'll find ourselves in the right place. Where one has an asset, another will have a liability. And where that person has an asset, this one will have a liability. And as you begin to balance each other off, what happens is your decisions come better into balance. So that not one of you is dominating the other, but you're trying to balance each other off.
If you want to learn more about aligning your heart and finances with your spouse, I want you to read Money Problems, Marriage Solutions. My wife and I wrote this book together and included practical principles to help create unity. For the rest of this month, you can receive your own copy for a generous donation of any amount to Crown. Just go to crown.org/marriagebook.
Good morning. It's 10 minutes after the hour. I'm having a little bit of trouble connecting with our good friend Carmen LaBerge, so maybe she will surface here in the next minute or two. But in the meantime, I was seeing that kids under age 9, found this interesting, are spending nearly an hour a day in front of a mobile screen. A recent report from Common Sense Media revealed that the amount of time kids spend in front of a screen has tripled in the last 4 years. Now, I don't want to age myself, but, you know, when I was a kid, yeah, here we go, the old when I was a kid story, but you went outside and you just created your fun and you just didn't sit around looking at screens. And I don't want to, again, say in my day, but I would take the trolley down to the diner for steak and kidney pie. You know, that's okay. Maybe I'm older than I think. But kids today, now, the question I have for our listeners, and maybe you can help me with this, if you're at the store and you've got a child and you've got the child on a screen and the child is quiet, that's buying you some time, a little peace and quiet. Now, does that mean that that's something you're going to return to regularly because you are pretty certain that's going to give you the time and the peace that you need to get done what you need to do? It is an awfully convenient babysitter or distractor at times, but if kids are spending triple the amount of time in the last 4 years on screens, is that going to mean that the direction with which they go is going to get better or worse? And what I mean by worse, it means that they're going to spend more time on a screen. So if you have a reaction to that and can give us some wisdom on that subject, I'd love to hear from you, 1-877-933-2484. Everybody wants to be the best parents in the world, and they want to do, they also have a lot of things they have to do in life and things they have to get done. And I remember my mom used to say, well, go out and play. And you'd go out and play, and you'd head out in the neighborhood, and you'd try to find your friends, and you'd figure out if you'd get a wiffle ball game going or something just to have fun and to do something and get out of your mom's hair. But nowadays, we seem to let the screen be the babysitter. And I think that's going to be more alarming as kids are getting less active and they're spending more time in front of screens, which usually ends up less time communicating with real people. So
unless it's through Skype.
Unless it's through Skype. Yes, yes.
Well, it's a hard topic. I mean, it's a hard conversation. I don't have all the answers.
Oh, I don't either. And I feel sorry for parents, you know, because the opposite would be don't give your kids the screen when they're in the store. And then they get anxious or bored or upset. And now you've got a child that's reacting in a negative way. And now you have to do your parenting stuff to try to calm the kid down.
That's got to be the nicest way I've ever heard to describe a toddler tantrum. A child that's reacting in a negative way.
I'm trying to be so nice.
Well, and I find it so hard to judge parents and other people's parenting because it's such a high stakes situation.
Oh, yeah,
it
yeah.
feels like people kind of get judged no matter what they do. Like exactly like you said, do you give the kid a screen to stop him screaming or do you allow him or her to scream? Do you take him out of the store? What do you do? It seems like you get judged no matter what. I will say the temptation is strong if you're in a place like church. I was with my little 2-year-old nephew in church last week and he's a good kid, but he'll get rambunctious. He's a 2-year-old boy and we're in church and we're trying to be quiet.
Yes.
So what do? It's easy enough to try to engage and bring out the books and the little things that you bring to keep him quiet. If you have a screen that's there, he loves those little games that you can look at
quiet.
The screen. He gets
yeah.
really quiet.
Yeah.
What do you do?
We have our friend with possibly some amazing wisdom. Nori's on the phone from Iowa at Faith 93.1. Good morning, Nori.
Are you talking to Lori?
I am indeed. It said Nori. So
Lori with an L.
Oh, okay. I'm going to fire Paul today, our call screener.
Okay. Am I on the radio now? Because I turned my radio off.
Yes, so. You are on the radio right now. Welcome to the show.
Okay. Okay, so what I want to say is I work at a school. I work with junior hires. And in the schools, all the kids are given a computer automatically. Everybody gets a computer. And I know it's important because they have to learn to use a computer because that's the age we're in right now. But we're kind of sabotaging our own plans if we want kids to spend less time on the computer because they've got their computers in the classroom, they have their computers in study hall, they take their computers home. I mean, it's for my kids in my class, the computers are open constantly. They're always on the computer. So, I mean, I see two sides of the coin, you know, they're on the computer too much, yes, but they have to be if they're going to navigate in our world, the way our world functions right now. And I keep telling the kids, go down and get a library book, do your schoolwork. Oh, and here's another thing. Their assignments are often on the computer now. They're math assignments. I mean, I used to sit down and do math on paper, and I'm teaching the kids how to do math on paper. But they're doing their math on the computer.
Lori, good for you. So, Lori, what you're saying is we are really training kids to just have the computers be with them every waking moment.
Absolutely. And when they don't have the computers, what do they got in their pockets? They've got their cell phones.
Oh, so yeah, they've got.
So when they leave the classroom, I have to say, put your cell phone on the desk, you know, because they say, I'm going to go potty now. Okay, put your cell phone on the desk. Well, they're not going to the bathroom. They're taking their cell phone. They're going to text somebody.
Wow. I wonder where they learned that.
You know, hey, you know what? They're addicted because we're addicted.
Thank you. Well said, Lori. This is the kind of wisdom I was looking for this morning.
Hey, you know what? I have horses, cattle, dogs, cats, ducks, and chickens. Do you know how hard it is when my kids were growing up to get them to go outside and play with the animals?
Really?
When they've got, you know, when they've got Nintendo to play with?
Wow. That's fascinating.
See, it's happening for everybody. It's not, you know, it's not, well, some, you know, hey, even the parents that have the best ideas and we provide these things for the kids to do, we still have to chase them out the door.
Yeah. Well, Lori, are you still a teacher?
Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you for the work you do, and thank you for, obviously, the love you have for these kids and the desire you have to teach. And, you know, you're being so loving towards these kids, so I just appreciate the call so much. Thank you so much for your work.
Yeah, thank you.
Yep, have a great day, Lori.
Okay, you too.
Thank you so much. It's 18 minutes after the hour. I'm going to take a little break, but if you have another piece of wisdom, please call us 1-877-933-2484. We'd love to hear from you. Be back in a minute.
Nothing to do to save his life, call his wife.
Good morning. It's 21 minutes after the hour. Welcome to the show. Cheerful Friday to you. It's October 20th. I've been chatting this morning about the incredible amount of time kids are spending on their mobile devices, their tablets. And now to continue our conversation, the report that I was reading said that 42% of kids 8 and younger have their own tablets. So that's up from 7% 4 years ago. So it is a steady climb. Every kid, lots of kids are getting their own tablets. And you know what goes from there is a lot more screen time and a lot more distraction, a lot less playtime outside. And I have Donna on the line. Good morning, Donna. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good.
I'm so glad you called. You got some wisdom for me, I bet.
Well, I was just thinking, you know, 50 years ago, we didn't have car seats, right? So in the car, we held our children. And now we have put babies all the way up, you know, in car seats, and it's a new problem. And our son and daughter-in-law have a two-year-old that they have chosen as a treat to let her watch things in the car because they travel 3.5 hours to come visit us. It's
sure.
a long ride for her. But I think it's important to choose the screen time wisely, what you put on the screen. And, you know, the car seat is a hard time for a toddler.
Oh, indeed.
So she's learned her numbers and ABCs watching, you know, educational things on the screen while they travel. So it kind of solved two problems at once. So I think we just have to be wise with how every technological advance brings a new problem. We just have to be wise in what we put in front of them, how long, you know. It can be a good thing if we use wisely.
No, I agree with you completely. I think it's an amazing amazing amount of technology available to us to teach us and train us, and we have to be awfully careful. Don, I so appreciate your call this morning. It's so true. I mean, we can demonize technology and say screens are bad, but no, screens are good. Screens help us train and educate and get kids to a different level of learning. You know, just some of the visual graphics that are associated with some of the educational videos are phenomenal. And I don't ever want to diminish the value of how smart and how smart technology can be for helping train our kids.
That's very true. And it does mark the age in which we are. So kids do need to learn how to function with technology. Honestly, I don't think that's a big problem. Most of the little kids I know can operate things with screens better than I can.
Right.
But at the same time, I think Donna's comment is so important about what content we're watching. Is it the screen? I mean, there is research out there that says just looking at things on screens compared to reading on pages might have an impact on your development. That's one side of the conversation. But if we are going to be looking at screens at some portion of our lives, what's really important is what we're putting into our brains, in front of our eyes, what we're meditating on day and night, to use a biblical phrase.
True.
I mean, are we just mindlessly kind of tuning out or watching YouTube videos of cats and tutus? Or are we
Don't go knocking the cats and tutus
I'm sorry.
Videos,
I didn't mean to get personal, Bill.
Those are hilarious. Cannot get enough of those.
You kind of get the point.
Well, yeah. But kids, kids are, they get that little dopamine hit from the video. And so when they see flashing things on the screen and it fires their little brains, I also would hope that they wouldn't be so addicted to that little dopamine hit that they always go to that, because then they never get comfortable with the everyday, ordinary, mundane sort of activity that goes on in life.
Well, and understanding that there is that same type of excitement in their imagination when they're reading a book or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Learning to engage different parts of the brain, not just the visual
That's
stimulation.
True. That's true.
Or learning to listen to a conversation and have that kind of social interaction, have that produce the positive reaction that it's supposed to. So relating through community, relating to your parents, to your siblings, to your schoolmates, that type of thing is supposed to help us develop in other ways. And if the phone or the tablet is being used as a substitute for that, that's when things get out of balance.
I agree with you, Miss Rebecca Maxwell. Thank you
for
that.
Oh, good. That we've solved the world's problems.
Well, we've solved many of them. So we're off to a good start this morning. And that's usually what you want to do on Friday, is kind of wrap up all the untidy things in life. So we just completed one task for the day. We'll take a break, and when we come back, Dr. Rosemary Stein is going to be with us, but we're going to go to Lighten Up first with Ken Davis. It's 26 minutes after the hour. So glad you're with us. Be back in a minute.
And they all have been blessed. That's the way God planned it. That's the way God wants it to be. Da-da-da-da. Gray skies are going to clear up. Put on a happy face. Wash off those clouds and cheer up.
You got it.
Put on a happy face.
Good morning. It's half past the hour. So glad you're with us this morning. We're going to go to news, but before that, there's a $1,000 bagel returning to New York City. Got an extra $1,000, burning a hole in your pocket? The $1,000 bagel is making a return. The Westin Hotel in Times Square is selling this over-the-top bagel for a limited time starting next month. The bagel, which was introduced 10 years ago, features white truffle cream cheese, goji berry-infused Riesling jelly, and topped with real gold leaf. The high cost includes tax and tip and is available at the hotel via room service. That's the kind of bagel I would go to pick up, and I would fall cream cheese down on the carpeting. And I'd go, ah, I just lost my bagel. Anyway, we'll take a break and be back in just a minute.
Put on a happy face.
Good morning. It's 25 minutes until the top of the hour. The Los Angeles Dodgers are on their way to the first World Series since 1988. Oof, they crushed the Cubbies last night, 11-1 in Game 5. That is a tough one for the Cubbies fans. We have many in this neck of the woods. Anyway, in Max Lucado's book, Glory Days, he talks about what it means to be refined by challenge and how we can endure struggles with hope.
Jesus said, in this world, you will have tribulation. He didn't say you might have. He said you will have. But then he said, but be of good cheer, because I have overcome the world. So God permits these challenges, these tribulations to come. And it seems like he lets these tribulations come because, number one, to remove them would be to remove free will from the world, something that he's not wont to do. Or number two, he allows these tests or these tribulations to shape us, to mold us, to form us more and more into his image. And so every test, every challenge can be used according to his plan to shape us and to be more and more like him. So to say we're refined by challenge means that we're stronger when we come through the challenge than we were when the challenge began. And I bet every one of your listeners could say, you know what, I didn't enjoy the challenge that I went through, but I came out of it a better person.
And that refined by challenge, kind of a nice tie into the Cubs there. That's how I'm kind of positioning it. Anyway, that was Max Lucado. Hear that full interview at myfaithradio.com. We'll take a break, and then we've got Dr. Rosemary Stein on the line. Be back in a minute.
What do you believe about God? It's one of the most important questions you can ask of yourself. This is Jim Garlow. What you believe about God is the most important question. Do you see God as an angry God? If you do, you'll cower in fear with no capacity for intimacy with him. Do you see God in kind of a sweet, sentimental way? If so, your mind makes God a pushover, and you become what's called antinomian or lawless. Do you think God is the man upstairs? What kind of title is that? The Bible teaches us that God is love, and God is just. We'll like the love part, not so much the just. It means we're responsible to God for what we do. And responsibility is good for us. It restrains us when it's necessary. What is God to you? Well, there's more about this at jimgarlow.com. Live out your faith.
For a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down. The medicine go down. Medicine. Go down.
23 minutes until the top of the hour. So glad you're with us today. It is Friday, so lots of reasons to be nice and happy. And then I hear that music and I get even happier because I know who's on the other side of that song. It's Dr. Rosemary Stein from the Christian Medical and Dental Association. Good morning, Dr. Rose.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. I started off my morning after a little bit of prayer time and coffee, and I checked out your video on Facebook about raising exceptional men. Well done.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I try to inspire parents out there, especially with all the news that's going around, and I try to counter that with things that are positive.
Yeah, now I want to encourage people to go see that, but I also want you to kind of share with our listeners what was on that video.
Well, I was I was a little touched in not such a positive way about all the things that are being said in the news about men and men mistreating women and not treating them with respect. And I wanted to give a little bit of a thought to parents of
how we can start the process and continue the process of raising good men that take care of their women and their families. And it just happened that the same day I had a young boy come into the clinic who was a bit abusive of his mom and his sister. And the mom brought that up to me at the practice, especially after he hit her when he didn't want to get his flu shot. And so I talked to her about her concern, and she and her concerns are real, and they are founded. And I told her, unless you get him off of this track, you will not be able to save his life, and he will be abusive of his women, and he will be a bit of a bully in situations where he's intimidated. And, of course, he was intimidated at that moment, but that was no excuse for his behavior. The good part is that the mom took my words very positively, and she said, yes, his dad and I will work on it, and we will do our best to turn him into a man. But that's how we do it. It's just one by one. We wouldn't make these kinds of ogres in our home if we parent deliberately. And we're becoming a very feminized society. And just because you're a bully doesn't mean that you're not, you're a good man. In fact, those are men that they just react to being intimidated and being being bullied themselves in a very not helpful way, but they will damage their own lives as much as they damage the lives of the people around them.
Mm-hmm. If I hit my mother, I'd be tasting Dove soap for 9 years,
or probably even something worse. I mean, if you told your mom something bad, you might be eating Dove soap. But if you hit your mom, I'd hate to think 20, 30, 40 years ago, I would hate to think if you even lifted your hand up to your mom, I would hate to think what would happen to somebody of our generation. It just didn't happen.
Yeah. So how old was this younger boy that hit his mom?
He's 12, and he's very tall. He's about 5, I want to say about 5'4", 5'5", mm-hmm. not taller. And he's topping out at about 200 pounds. So you can imagine that at school, he's probably getting bullied and getting his part of being intimidated and being put down. And
sure.
He has self-confidence problems, but there's no excuse for that.
Well, there's no excuse, but yeah, he probably is dealing with some issues at school, and he's probably trying to go on the defensive, and he's so used to being on the defensive because that's how he survives. I'm not excusing
that's
it.
Right.
I'm just saying it's really a sad situation.
And so I gave that scenario to the mom, and I said, look, you can't just come at him and just say you're going to do this or else. That might be one approach, but that would not be probably the most fruitful one. Really put yourself in his shoes without pitying him, without taking away the pain that he's going to go through, and understand that growing is pain. And he's going to have to face this one, but if he faces it with mom and dad's support and understanding, love, and patience, then he'll get through it and make him a good man.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Rose, if you are a kid that's going through these insecurities and you feel like you're fearing rejection, do sometimes kids do something offensive? Before you can reject me, I'll do something offensive that will make me completely rejectable. That way I control the situation a little bit.
Oh, that is exactly how kids act. And in fact, they get ahead of you so that they have a reason to be rejected. How awful would it be to be rejected and it's for no reason? If I have a reason to be rejected and I spit in your face,
right,
then it doesn't feel so bad. And so that's why they act out with their teachers and they create an environment that is totally almost unbearable. And I tell the moms that they have to love them through it, and they have to keep on telling them, I love you no matter what. And that's a lot of what we do in the clinic, where I tell them, you know, no matter what you do, your parents will love you, and I will stick by you no matter what you do. But there are some things that we will have to deal with, and we will take them one by one. And, you know, the funniest thing is that they look at me, and I can see that spark in their eyes where they really get it. And at the end, more times than not, they'll come over and they'll give me a big hug, and they'll say, I'll try harder, doctor.
That's lovely. You know, I was talking about Hebrews this morning about running the race that's been marked out for you, and And the race is the Greek word agnon, which means agony. And I think life is very difficult and very challenging. And but there is a race. God has marked it out for us. And we always have to just be encouraging kids just to try to do the next right thing.
And it's not easy. And it's not easy to be patient and to run the race with them side by side. Because it looks like this is never going to change. And I guarantee you, if you hold on just a little while longer, and I don't know how long a little while longer is, it will be worth it and that child will turn around.
Yes, just keep standing strong. But there has been new reports out about an increased amount of depression and anxiety in teens.
I see this every day, and it's not just what's going on around us. And think about it. We live in very uncertain times. We hear all the news, and we hear about Korea and Russia and all these things and terrorist attacks and hurricanes. These things are very unsettling to a child. But think about kids that grew up during the Holocaust, during World War II, World War I. I mean, you know, the world, the history of the world points to the fact that it's always been an unstable world. But our kids are more depressed in our country than in other countries and in other times, and more anxiety driven. And that has to do a lot, not all of it, but a lot with how we're growing them up. And we're just not growing them up sturdy with the face of a mom and a dad that tells them constantly, you know, you're here, we love you, and we are here to help you and support you the best that we can, and we will create a stable environment for you. And instead, we're babying our children every step of the way, and I understand the desire to want to baby them, but we're not building them.
Mm-hmm.
We have to build our children.
Yeah, well, I grew up in the 70s where I had those plaid sport coats with wide lapels and nicely blow-combed hair. Just let me say, it was a good look.
And that would create anxiety in any teenager.
Of course it would. All right, Dr. Rose, let me take a break. And we'll come back and continue our conversation. I'm speaking to Dr. Rosemary Stein from the Christian Medical and Dental Association. So glad she is with us this morning. And I'm so glad you're with us. It's 14 minutes until the top of the hour. I'll be right back. It's 12 minutes until the top of the hour, and it is Friday, October 20th. We're so glad you're joining us this morning. I'm speaking to Dr. Rosemary Stein from the Christian Medical and Dental Association. And Rosemary, you always say, and you always are reminding us, that the parent's role in education is so vital.
Oh, that's so right. And I think we're leaving the education to the administrators, and that's why we're not getting good results. Kids can't make change at the McDonald's anymore.
Well, they don't really have to, because the cash register tells them how much change to give back.
That's right. And if they had to, they would give you this blank look. And I I just feel so bad for them, because they haven't been taught how to think for themselves. And that's part of the education process.
Yeah, well, everyone's walking around with a calculator on their phone. I mean, you're never really in a position where you can't figure something out quickly with your phone.
I know. And even doctors are Googling their medical information. So it's not just our children. It's everywhere in society.
Yeah. What do you make of parents that Google all their kids' symptoms and they come in kind of instructing you what to do?
Oh, it's difficult, but as you can imagine, at my practice, because I have, for the most part, a long-standing relationship with my patients, they're much more open, and they ask me a lot of, what do you think? So they're not aggressive, like I'm not giving them what they want, for the most part. But, you know, I go through it and I say, you know, you have to be able to counter what you're looking at on the phone with experience. And life is like that. You have to put two things together, which is a little bit of knowledge with a lot of experience, and then you can get the right answer. But unless you're actually living your life and taking it in and looking at what's going on with your neighbor, not in a nosy way, but just, understanding that, and what's going on with your coworker, you can't put it all together and make good decisions. And that's what it comes down to. We're building a generation of poor decision makers, and education was supposed to help us not only do algebra, but to make good decisions throughout life and have that experience to fall back on. The reason that Shakespeare is so important is not because where art thou, Romeo? It's because a set of experiences that Shakespeare was talking about could be applied to life even in the 21st century, and we're just not getting we're not understanding that is what education is, helping a person to make great decisions throughout life with what they've learned at school and at home.
Doctors must be real tempted to want to say to people in their office, my medical degree is smarter than your Google search.
I actually had a doctor who's no longer with us who would say that all the time.
Okay.
The patients would come out with this really upset look on their face, and we were like, oh, no, he did it again.
All right, let's chat a little bit about what's going on over in Europe with the U.S. National Health Services banning surgery for patients who are too obese or smoking. Is that the direction medicine might be heading here in the U.S.?
I am so sorry to report that, yes. We attended a medical conference this weekend where we heard things like joint repair or knee replacement, hip replacement will be based solely, almost exclusively, on criteria that the patient has to meet regarding their health. And one of them is obesity, the other one is blood pressure, the other one is signs of diabetes. And if you have these, your surgery, whether you are able to pay because of your insurance, your mobility, it will be negated. And when I heard that, my chest was actually hurting because of two things. I was feeling for the patient who can't move, but we're telling them that unless they lose weight, they can't have a surgery. Then, of course, that you need the surgery to be able to move to lose weight. Mm-hmm. That would be going round and round. But the second thing that was really concerning to me was that this was a doctor lecturing other doctors about the necessity of doing this to other patients. And he couldn't see that he was taking an elitist or a platonic sort of view instead of a Hippocratic view over their patients. I think that Hippocrates and even, our dear Lord Jesus Christ would just absolutely cringe and be very upset at the way that doctors themselves and the leaders in medicine are looking at how to apply medicine in our lives. And I really believe that this is going to be the new wave is for elitist administrators, whether they're doctors or not, to tell us what we deserve and what we don't deserve, whether you're a paying customer or not.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Rose, what's the spiritual temperature among most doctors and colleagues that you associate with and go to these conferences with?
I think for the most part, it's rather zombie-like, so that they're thinking more of the societal benefits of their being a doctor and sort of checking the boxes and doing what they're supposed to do because the leaders in medicine are telling them that this is the way to practice medicine. Now, the interesting part is that many times that a spark can be awoken if you really work at it. Unfortunately, some doctors feel so uncomfortable at having to work extra for the patient that they would rather turn their back on the true way to practice medicine with empathy, but also with you have to give of yourself to be able to change somebody's life, and that just appears to be too much of a commitment for many doctors. But I think that we could turn this ship around, and I think the Christian Medical Dental Association is one of those avenues.
Mm-hmm. I see you taking your skills and the talents God has given you and taking your life. And I see you just pouring it into your patients and loving on them with just such patience and tenderness. And I'm just kind of inspired by you, Dr. Rose. I got to have to just to admit.
Well, thank you very much. I just do it because I love these kids. And
I can see that. You know, I can tell.
They keep me keeping on, and the changes in them and the changes in their parent. And to get to a child, you for the most part have to get through the parent and have the parent make, even if it's nominal changes, so that you can broaden and strengthen that child's life.
Mm-hmm. As always, I look forward to our conversations, and I want to encourage our listeners to head over to your Facebook page, Rosemary Stein, and watch some of the great videos you put out, because they're very good and helpful and informative. So thank you.
Thank you. You have a great week.
All right. Talk to you later. It is 3.5 minutes until the top of the hour. Thanks for being with us. I'll be right back. It is a couple of minutes until the top of the hour. Really glad you're with us this morning. And thank you to Dr. Rosemary Stein. She's always so engaging. I really like her. And just want to say we've got a great second hour coming up. Adam Holtz is going to be with us. We're going to talk a little bit about movies and what's happening this weekend in the movie theaters. And then also George Barna. George has written, I don't know, 30, 50 books. I've lost track. Anyway, he's gotten a new book out. We're going to talk to him in the next hour as well. Got a lot of still a lot of great show coming up. We'll be back in just a minute. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend, and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.